Welcome to Georgia Focus. I'm John Clark on the Georgia News Network. The Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education connects leaders across our state to create better educational opportunities for students and more positive economic outcomes for communities. They've just released their top 10 issues to watch for 2025. Here today to talk about the issues are Dr. Dana Rickman, President and CEO, and Matt Smith, Director of Policy and Research. Well, here we are today. Top 10 issues, excellence in education, Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education. Good to have you all in today.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
It's great
you.
To be here
Happy
again.
New
2025,
Year.
If yeah. you can believe it.
You just were here the other day.
I know.
It's great. It's great. We know. I know every year that it's a new year when we have you guys in to do these mm-hmm. top 10 issues. Mm-hmm. And so let's get right to them then. Let's
All do right.
Well, I'm going to start at top 10 and go down to 1. So, but they're in no particular order, though, are they?
Well, they're not in any particular order of priority.
Okay.
But we did do something a little different this year where we kind of made chapters, as you were. So,
oh, okay.
like, groups of them hang together.
Okay.
And I'll let the primary author, our policy director, Matt Smith, talk about the three different sections, and then we can dive in real briefly.
Yeah, for sure. So we do have a stage-setting issue, but we have 9 issues that are subsequent to that. And issues 2 through 4 we call a recipe for deeper learning. And these are the factors that support student success and well-being. The middle three issues 5 through 7, we're talking about how we can reconfigure state systems of support to support school and community leaders. And finally, we have the final 3 issues regarding things that we want to see happen in the future that will prepare us for individual prosperity and community resilience, as well as state economic security. So that's how we kind of set that out this year in chapters.
Who gets this every year?
Everybody gets
Everybody.
It.
Okay.
Our target audience are our stakeholders, which again are not only like state level policymakers who make the decisions about mm-hmm. you know schools and workforce pipelines, but also community leaders, advocates, business leaders. We have folks who use this who teach education policy at the different institutions of higher education. Our goal here is to take complex education issues and really break them down so the average layperson can understand why is this issue important, what are some options for Georgia, and how can I, as either a parent, a community leader, or a legislator, use this information to help make better choices and better decisions.
Okay. Well, let's get started then. Issue number 10 is investing in Georgia's future. Measuring what matters.
Right. So we're doing the countdown, I guess. So issue 10 and issue 1 are kind of connected. So that's kind of a good way for okay. us to do this, John. So issue 10, we're talking about a new mindset. The idea that we're measuring what matters. All too often what happens is that we kind of measure things like how many students graduate high school, how many complete a post-secondary degree or credential, whereas we don't know how they got to that result, or more importantly, what happened so they didn't have a great result like that. And so we have proposed that there be a set of leading indicators that allow us to predict how individuals and communities they live in, how they can support that work. And so that's really what we're doing. And so in that issue, we propose 2 things. One of them around state finance is to think about setting a clear vision, which we outline in issue 1 and go into greater depth for in issue 10. The second thing is around the idea that communities drive solutions, and so we can learn a lot about them when we have accountability conversations at the state level. And so really the ethos around issue 10 is that communities drive solutions, but states can support community innovation. And so the idea is, how could we then have state finance and state accountability support community innovation?
I just the one thing about sort of changing this mindset, and again, this is really 1 and 10 together, is thinking about the overall support, public will and leadership will to invest in and support public education.
Okay.
And the good measures that Matt's talking about is, how do we know what we're doing is actually working? Like,
okay.
what's a good return on investment? Are the programs working? And really think about why we're putting our money where we're putting it, and is it getting the best bang for our dollar?
Issue number 9, artificial intelligence, using
yes.
technology to support learning. Artificial intelligence.
I keep hearing that. I don't know if you've heard about this,
yeah,
John, but AI is a thing. And,
I know.
You know,
yeah.
it's one of those things, it's like back in the Stone Ages when I was in school and they said, oh, yeah. let kids use a calculator.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where it could be a hammer, where it can build something great or you can beat somebody with it. And so really thinking about, you know, recommendations on how school districts and post-secondary can really use AI to enhance learning, to build in efficiencies for instructors and teachers, but also what kind of guardrails do we need to do, and that it still needs that human component to guide the positive uses of AI and not some of the more nefarious abuses of it.
Right.
Yeah, and I would add, too, to Dana's point, that what's really important as well with AI is the idea that our more well-resourced schools and districts will be early adopters of AI and its positive uses, but we need to make sure that, to her point, that the state is involved to make sure that those that maybe are under-resourced still benefit from artificial right. intelligence as well.
So the states that I say this as a resource, sort of, like for AI. You're like, well, we don't have anything else to use. Let's use that to help in the smaller jurisdictions. Is that the case? You think that'll be used more?
I mean, it can be. There's so many different things around it. Gwinnett County has worked really hard to create some guidance for the system in terms of how do we embed AI in our professional development? How do we embed it in our instruction? Mm. Things like that to really assist sort of infusing AI into their everyday work. But then you have smaller districts that maybe don't have the bandwidth, the connectivity, right. all of these other things to actually use AI in a positive way. And so you have generations of kids who grew up that, you know, technology savvy, much more so than some of the teachers in the classroom who will adopt it. You know, when kids get a hold of something new, they can run with it.
Yeah.
And so how do we make sure that more under-resourced schools and districts are able to keep up with the technology, which is changing faster than we can even learn about what happened last year?
Right.
So all of these considerations need to be – that's where the state can really help support and spread knowledge.
Wow. Issue number 8 is employability, looking to 2033 – and beyond.
Yeah, and so one thing that we've been looking at and kind of underpins our work is what we call the EdQuest Georgia Initiative. And the idea is that we want to ensure that 65% of Georgia's adults age 25 to 64 have earned a post-secondary credential of value. And this kind of dovetails with what we're talking about with AI. AI is a disruptive innovation, mm-hmm. but so is the idea that we want to make sure that those folks that are going to be upset by a changing economy are able to continue to seek and obtain employment. And so really in this issue, we're focusing on mostly those folks that maybe have just maybe a high school diploma or don't even have a high school diploma, because those are the people that are going to be most negatively affected most immediately by changes in the economy between now and 2033.
Also, too, I would add on this one, when we think about education policy, public education policy, we naturally think about like the K-12 space. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we think about post-secondary and we think about students who are in, you know, Georgia Tech or Georgia State or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's an entire adult population across Georgia that needs public education services as well. So we can't forget about the adults. And this issue really looks at one aspect of that.
And the final thing, too, to kind of rip on that, what Dana said too, this is a large population. We're talking about almost 40% of the adult population that either has only a high school diploma or doesn't have a high school diploma or equivalency. So we're talking about 2 out of 5 Georgians. That's a lot.
Wow, that really is a lot.
And we want to keep being the best state to do business.
Yeah,
you need to make sure that those people get caught up and stay caught up.
Absolutely. Issue number 7, post-secondary transitions, non-traditional routes to work readiness.
Yeah, and this underpins the employability issue that we just talked about, that there has been a lot of work and still needs to be a lot of work, you know, transitioning from high school into post-secondary and getting that degree or that job. And we think in terms of degrees, like a bachelor's degree or an associate's degree, but there's a lot of work in Georgia being done around short-term credentialing and sort of non-degree, non-credit pathways that get you to that certificate or that, you know, next level of employment and thinking about career strategies. And so this issue really looks at the role and purpose of non-degreed programs getting those needed credentials.
Okay. Are there still so many people that they have high school diplomas, or do they, I mean, they don't have high school diplomas that need jobs?
Yes.
Can they go back and get these diplomas?
Yes.
That's what you recommend.
Yeah, and where Georgia is almost an embarrassment of riches, where we have so many opportunities for it. If you have a high school diploma or you're close to completing some sort of high school equivalency, that there are a lot of opportunities to join the workforce in a very low cost, almost no cost way in terms of getting these types of credentials. They have what they call laddered programs, where one certification leads to another. And so you can actually go into a career pathway, not just a job. very low cost, if not no cost, depending on where you're going. But where Georgia really needs some help is communicating that, that these pathways are available, knowing where to get in, that you can really work your way up into a good career without spending almost any money of your own through these kinds of pathways.
Issue number six, tailoring school staffing to students, teachers, and community needs.
Yeah, I'll take this one, John. I think what's really interesting about what we saw in the pandemic is that schools and districts were really accelerating these kind of innovative ideas because they had to. You know, they had to make sure that there were mental health facilitators in the building, making sure that there were tutors and interventionists to make sure that people that were students that were falling behind had the resources they need. And now, as we've exited the pandemic, John, what do we do? What do we do to kind of make that permanent? And so that's the crux of this issue. In the literature, we call it strategic staffing, and that's just a fancy way of saying how can we align student and community needs to how we staff schools. And so it's not just teachers, it's mental health facilitators, it's, like I said, tutors, coaches, paraprofessionals. How can we make sure that we're staffing according to what students need?
Issue number five, strong foundations, ensuring Georgians' youngest are primed for lifelong success. Starting out young.
Yeah, this has really been a core issue we've been talking about for the last several top tens, the idea that Georgia would benefit from a unified child development strategy where we blend, or what we call in our industry, mixed delivery, meaning that students receive education supports, they receive health and early intervention supports, and making sure that families, parents, caregivers, and young children get that support and make sure that there aren't those gaps that we see in readiness for school.
Yeah, Georgia's another state where we do have a lot of services for families with young children, but they are very divided. And so you've got, especially families with a lot of needs, you have, you know, health services in one area, you have child care services, limited as they are, in another area, you know, family support services. And so thinking about what we sort of a multi-generational approach, you know, what do the parents need? What do the families need? What do the children need? So that during those critical years of, you know, 0 to 5, you know, birth until they get into school, that their needs are met. And so children can show up to school ready to learn at kindergarten, and that really takes the whole family and supports for everybody. And so what's a sort of unified plan to make that easier for everybody to move us forward?
Children now are, like you said, showing up to school for kindergarten, and they're ready to go. I mean, they're starting younger and younger and younger, learning stuff now.
Yeah, many children are, but the problem is many children are not.
Right.
And that creates, they show up in kindergarten, and we already see these big gaps. We already see these sort of those with and without, and the school system is charged with fixing all of that.
Right.
That took, you know, 5 years to develop. And so how can we support them much earlier on? And there's, you know, evidence around parents as children programs and things starting when kids are infants and just born that really set up families and kids for success that aren't necessarily really high cost. They just take commitment and coordination.
Man, that's amazing. When the kid's just born and already he's learning things already.
He's
already learned.
They pop out learning
and
wanting to learn and like really curious. And so how can we foster that?
It was always before just wait till he gets to kindergarten and start learning. But not anymore. Issue number four, quality teaching, preparing for the deeper learning transition. What about that one?
Yeah, you know, it's always said, but can never be said enough, that a high quality teacher in every classroom is the number one thing you can do to improve. But teaching, I think teachers will tell you, especially since the pandemic, but just overall, has changed so much. And really thinking about how students learn, how they receive information, how to best keep them engaged. And so a lot of successful systems are really shifting to more of a student-led learning environment, you know, inquiry and all these other kinds of things. And that's a different approach to just, you know, teachers standing at the front of the classroom and lecturing, right? No one has ever really learned well that way. But, you know, but that requires retraining teachers about how to best engage their students, how to best, you know, foster a learning environment. So thinking about how do we support teachers in this transition to this deeper learning, as opposed to what historically has always been done to poor teachers, said, hey, here's your new way to go. Good luck. Let us know how it goes. And so be really thoughtful about the supports that they need so they can be successful, so our kids can be successful.
Yeah, yeah. And I would add that it's really important to think of schools as a collaborative space. All too often, we've had this notion that teachers are kind of in like these little mini one-room schoolhouses where they're leading instruction, they're doing this work, they're providing feedback to students, but they're not working collaboratively with their peers. And so the idea is that we're trying to build greater resilience for teachers by making sure that they're getting professional development from each other and that they're getting their needs met as well. We talk so much about student resilience coming out of the pandemic. It's also important that teachers are banding together and not getting burnt out by being together and sharing the load of learning how to make this transition to deeper learning.
And importantly, that teachers are actually part of this transition process. Mm-hmm. Like they feel empowered and they feel engaged and they feel like they have some ownership and agency in how this is going. And because they're the experts. We should be asking them more how best to deliver this lesson instead of telling them, here's training to do it this way. So it's very much a collaborative vision that we have.
Yeah. I can see that teacher, boy, without teachers now, You don't have anything. You probably need teachers in schools in Georgia anyway.
Yeah.
You need teachers all the time. Always.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And make it a welcoming profession.
Right.
That's key. They should want to be there. They should feel appreciated, be the professionals that they are, treated that way. Mm-hmm. And we need to grow that cadre of teachers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The third issue, student agency, the key to long-term success and well-being.
Yeah, John, I think one thing that we did, and I'm glad we actually went backwards because it actually helps us kind of clarify some points. And so we say that teaching is like so fundamental in making this process the student-led learning. But one thing we also have to do is that teachers are not just content experts. They also can support learning and building mindsets for students so they feel motivated and they feel that they can actually learn. And I know a lot of that sounds kind of like amateur psychology, but really what it is that teachers are the ones that are cultivating a love of learning, not just the content behind learning. And so what's really exciting about this issue for the first time is we're saying that when students own learning, they're able to reimagine not just what they're going to do in their future, but feel ownership and feel like, oh my goodness, I have the agency to kind of shape my path instead of just saying like, oh, I guess when I'm in 11th grade, I'll figure out what I'm going to do with my life. There'll be a longer runway for them to figure out what they want to do with their life.
Right. Mm-hmm. Dana?
Yeah, I would just agree and try to cut down. We know that a lot of high school dropouts happen not because the kids aren't smart, but because they're bored.
Yeah.
And they don't see the relevance. They don't feel it's engaging to them. It doesn't feel necessary to them. So the earlier you can really cultivate that ownership and it's something that they're interested in and they're driving, the longer we can hold on to them.
And to a certain extent, it is kind of a silent epidemic. Yeah. The fact that we have a national survey that we cite in the top 10 that only about 14 or 15% of students in high school actually feel engaged in the coursework and feel like they're challenged in the coursework. And so it is a problem that we do need to address. And deeper learning is one of the approaches that'll solve that problem.
I was like that, I think, in school.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm bored.
Yeah.
I'm bored.
And then you found radio.
And then I found radio. I work at a radio station.
Yeah. And you started showing up with excitement.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and it's the same for adults. If you have a job that doesn't interest you, you're not going to be your best person.
Yeah.
If you go to a work environment that's not fun for you, you're going to be late. You're going to sleep in. You're going to be grumpy.
Mm-hmm.
Same for kids.
Yeah.
And we just don't think about it that way. And we should.
Yeah.
Number two, student attendance. A leading indicator of success. You got to get them in there. Got to get them attending.
I mean, if you're not there, that pretty much sums it up.
It.
One of the things that has been growing, and it sounds silly just to talk about attendance, but it's so vitally important because, as we said, if you're not there, you know, you're not learning. And what happened during the pandemic is that a significant increase in the proportion of students that were, you know, what we call chronically absent, which is missing about 15 days or more of the school year for whatever reason, whether they be sick or they just don't want to go, right? Excused versus unexcused absence, it doesn't matter, significantly affects their long-term outcomes. I mean, we talk about, you know, grade level reading is always a big thing, that students who are chronically absent in that K-3 time frame, significantly more likely not to be reading on grade level by third grade. And it's become such sort of a, it's not just in Georgia, it's become such a national issue that we're seeing national sort of bipartisan agreement and support about what to do. And in a time where nobody agrees on anything, we've got people on both sides of the spectrum and extremes of the spectrum really coming together. So we have got to make sure that students make it to school and stay in school. And the issue with this is that it's not just one thing. There's so many. It's such a complicated factor, from the obvious things of, you know, health and wellness, yeah, right, to things like transportation, to homelessness, to frankly parent apathy for the younger kids, mm-hmm, the K-3 kids. I mean, even I have a lot of friends who are like, oh, we're going to take our spring break the next week because that's when it's not as crowded. And what are they really going to miss in a week of first grade, right?
That's a pretty common sentiment.
And the thing is, actually, they do miss a lot. And it's really something that we need to get a handle on and figure out complex solution to a complex problem.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I would add, too, that one thing that might be surprising to you is that many districts are starting to figure out how to include student attendance among their early warning indicators, and it might be missing as few as 2 or 3 days in a 9-week period, and that triggers kind of an indicator where they reach out to parents, they reach out to caregivers to make sure that everything is going smoothly and that there aren't underlying issues that would affect the student success or well-being.
And the final issue, issue number one, not that it's more important than the others, is securing Georgia's future, rediscovering the purpose of public education.
Right. You know, we think about public education as a community good and really thinking about, you know, how do we engage the public about it, and why we meaning those of us who are passionate and supporters of public education, engaging all community members, whether they have a child in school or not, and to really understand why public education is so important, why it affects everybody, mm-hmm, and really building that public will to supporting public education instead of, you know, a common narrative we've heard over the past little while is really demonizing public education and how can I get kids out of it? And that doesn't seem like a sustainable solution for the overall common good.
Yeah, yeah.
And really thinking about from a community level, you know, what can we agree upon are the important things like we want our graduates to know.
Right.
Like, what do we want from our public education system? How can we get there?
Yeah.
Again, more collaboratively, you know, more proactively and taking a proactive stance around supporting public ed.
And I would add from Dana's point, too, that last year we were talking about how at a community level, especially just how divisive and polarized things are. We took a more of a positive spin this year to focus on the fact that there is a promise. There is kind of a social contract, if you will, where if people are coming together as neighbors and as community members, there are things that they can do where they can share priorities and they can share goals, even if that doesn't mean they agree always on the final strategy. At least there is some consensus there. And so what we're excited about is that with that open and frank dialogue, that there might be eventually a situation where more communities are thinking about being more inclusive about how they talk about public education involving more people in the process. I know that a lot of times parents and community members feel like they don't know what's going on in a school. Yeah. And so it'd be helpful to even to have kind of like listening tours where they say, this is what we're doing, and being very transparent about that so people don't feel like anything's kind of hiding in the dark, you know?
Yeah.
And so. And how schools are seen as an asset of a community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not just where we put kids, you know, when parents at work. Yeah. That's coming from a working parent who needed to put her kid somewhere.
But
that they are other assets as well, and really building that public will and that public support.
Yep.
Where is this available online?
It is available on our website, www.gpee.org. You can download copies for free, or if you'd like one or two copies mailed to you, we'll mail you a couple hard copies for free. If you want more than two, we just ask that you pay for postage.
Okay.
We also have one-page summaries of each of these available at the same website, gpee.org, and all of our contact information is there as well.
And they can contact you if they have any questions about it, I guess.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I know it's you look back. Do you ever look back and see how you did previous years, how you did, if you achieved these goals and things like that?
We do. Well, we always look back and kind of see where we are and take stock. And there's sort of a running joke that the perennial issues really don't change. The actual issues, like funding, right? We're always talking about funding. But the context of the issue changes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some year funding, for an example, for years and years and years, it was, oh, austerity cuts. We don't have enough money. What do we do? And then the pandemic hit and we had these federal relief funds. It's like, oh, we have all this money. Now what do we do? And now it's like, oh, how do we, you know, invest our money? And so the context and how we talk about the issues change, but the fundamental issues of good teachers, good leaders, student support, appropriate resources, like those stay pretty, I mean, you know what it takes to make a great school. Right. And so we just sort of tweak at the details of how we're going to go about doing it.
Thank you very much for being here today.
Well,
I appreciate
you.
It. It goes by fast.
Happy New Year.
And we'll see how we go with these.
That's Dr. Dana Rickman, who's president and CEO, and Matt Smith, director of policy and research for the Georgia Partnership for Excellence in Education. You can find out more about them at gpee.org. For questions or comments about today's program, you can email me, johnclark@iheartmedia.com. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next week right here on your local radio station on Georgia Focus.